CKUT 90.3 FM from Montreal.
Good morning, Montreal. You are tuned to the Wednesday Morning After on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal. We have a full show for you today with two pre-recorded interviews and one podcast from the Headstuff archives of In the Shower with Taz and Marcus. The first interview is with trans femme comedian Allo Asimov about her latest show at the Diving Bell Social Club. The second interview is with Etienne and Gabriel of Le Vaisseau d'Or. They are speaking about their music and video project, Desire Forever. In the Shower with Taz and Marcus brings us the question, are oysters aphrodisiacs? 8 a.m. brings Democracy Now!, 8:15 brings weather, and we'll listen to some more music before we wrap up the show. Let's start the day off with some music.
Okay. just beginning. Jaded, shy and unwilling. Wasted in a taste of forgetting.
Two globes behold. Le Festival International de Nuit d'Afrique, presented by TD Bank, invites you to their 35th anniversary this summer. Join us for this world music event, a 13-day celebration from July 6th to the 18th. This innovative edition takes place in venues, outdoors, and online, a fusion of past and present, rich in history and in new musical discoveries. Discover the surprises. For more information and tickets, go to festivalnuitdafrique.com.
Allo Asimov is a comedian, storyteller, writer, and producer. Her pronouns are she, her, and they, them. She was recently featured in the documentary Soignez l'Esprit, as well as her stand-up comedy on Radio Canada's Documanite. Allo is a trans-feminine, non-binary human. They deliver silly stories about gender identity, moving on, and healing. With us today, we have Allo Asimov. Hi, Allo, and welcome to the show.
Hi, Sheila. Thank you so much for having me.
First, please introduce yourself and tell us how you came to be involved in comedy.
Hello, my name is Allo Asimov. I'm a comedian, storyteller, writer, and I am a trans-feminine, non-binary human, and I got started in comedy through open mics in the city of Montreal and through the club system of the Comedy Nest and the Comedy Works when it was running. And that's how I started, just doing local shows.
Where have you performed over the years as a comedian?
I've performed mainly in Montreal, to be honest. I did perform once in Maine at a wedding. I performed at the Comedy Nest, the Comedy Works, those two clubs. I performed at Theatre St. Catherine. I performed at Mainline Theatre. I've performed at Montreal Improv when Montreal Improv was around. I've performed at venues similar to those and mostly clubs and theatres. A few bars, a few cafes, like Shake a Cafe. And mainly I've been performing when I've been lucky to in certain festivals, such as Montreal Sketch Fest.
You're also a radio host. Please tell us about your show.
I host a show for Antennas Radio, the letter N, number 10, period, AS, kind of like antennas on your TV or radio. I love that name. It's a community radio station in Montreal. I've been hosting that show for 3 years. The show is called Achievement Unlocked. Kudos. The whole show is about achievement culture under capitalism and how do we find a sense of fulfillment in our arts. I mainly interview artists about their creative process and how they find motivation and how they set goals.
You're going to be performing in the near future at the Diving Bell Social Club. Please tell us about the event and where our listeners can get tickets.
I'm so happy to be hosting and to create the show Tales of Gender Affirmation at the Diving Bell Social Club. I'm so excited. The show is a comedy storytelling show about gender identity, where comedians who are trans, non-binary, gender non-conforming, and some allies can tell jokes, tell funny stories in a space where they feel more free to just express their gender. And the show can be found on Eventbrite if you type in Tales of Gender Affirmation Live or Tales of Gender Affirmation Live comedy show on Eventbrite.
May we listen to some of your comedy?
Yes, please.
This is Blue Dog Street on the Wednesday Morning After.
Hello, Asimov, everybody.
Let's get it, bro.
Oh, shit. Imagine if I just fell. Give it up for yourselves. Give it up for your host, Ben. Thank you, Hart, Shamar, W. Just thank you, everyone who stuck around. I hope you're doing well. Just thank you all for being here. If I said all your names, that would be my set. Speaking of names, I have this shirt here. It says, I love Aloe. You know, I love myself. At least my sister thinks so, so she made me this shirt. But every time I look down, all I see in the mirror is, Ola, evil eye. So, I have that following me around the room. Sometimes I lose the shirt just because, you know, it's hard to love yourself. So, and I put it back on when I'm ready. I'm Jewish. Can't you tell by the locks that I got? I'm still Aloe on the block. First I had a little, now I have a lot. Oh, my voice cracked. But you know where I came from? The bagel shop, you know? That's where I get my locks for my bagel. My culture is interlocked just across the street. All right. J-Lo, don't sue. I'm non-binary, I'm trans feminine. I'm not a man. I'm kind of a woman. That's not a very empowering song though. I'm kind of a woman. You go, kind of girl, you know? That's my gender though. Kind of girl, demigirl. It's a real thing, look it up. But I'm Jewish, so my parents really tried to make me a man. Like, ooh, they gave me 2 bar mitzvahs. Like, now you're a man. Now you're a man. Fine, you can wear a dress. No, they didn't let me. But speaking of dresses, oh, this is a long costume change. This is just. Okay. You're too kind. I can't match your energy, but I have a dress, I guess. There's no bra because my mom wants me to go braless. No, she just doesn't want me to wear bras. My mom's nickname for me is Caitlin, because that's the only trans person she knows. So my nickname for her is Bruce, you know? She's more of a Chris, but anyway, you know? Any reality TV fans? Okay. So if you can tell by this dress, there's like a zipper in the back. Don't ask me how. I'm 28, I live at home. No one zipped me up, I did it myself. And no one's getting me out of this thing. I'm not stuck in the closet, I'm stuck in this dress. Anyone wanna help me after the show? That's where I'm at. I'm a Jewish Arab, which basically means I get recruited a lot. Fighting my war, no thanks. thank you so much for that. I'm saying it too. But I'm also Ukrainian, I'm European, my mom's brown, I don't look it, but it's true, and I'm Russian. So, you know, I just don't travel because I'm not welcome anywhere. You know, like, I go to Russia, they're like, you're gay, you know? I go to Poland, they're like, you're gay. I go to Yemen, they're like, nice dress, but you know how this goes. You know, in Canada, they're like, go back to the Middle East. I'm like, I didn't fight in the war. And then they're like, you know, but Montreal, what? Bagels for days. I only like to travel to bagel shops. That's where I feel safe. The bagel shop down the street, St. Viateur, and here. That's where I like to travel. Street Bits. Okay, that's the name of the show. Full circle. Oh, I'm forgetting jokes now. Oh, yeah. I don't like to be treated like a man, so please don't treat me like a man. Like, I know I sound like your dad, but don't treat me like a man. I know I'm giving some fatherly advice right now. Like, you know, fix your tie, but don't treat me like a man. Don't call me dad, son. But, you know, I'm not your dad. I will pick you up from soccer practice on time. And, you know, if it's in the bedroom and you're not family, you can call me daddy. So that's, I hope that's okay. All right. I don't think that was for the straight people. I'm sorry. Do I have anything else? Believe it or not, I went to a psych ward. It was a while back. It's like more of a throwback. And believe it or not, I wasn't popular. I didn't fit in. You know, I was in the break room and I was like, I have anxiety. And everyone's like, shut up. You're not special. We have it too. Shut up. And then they all came closer together as a unit and put me in my room and kept me isolated there for the rest of the stay. So, no, that's too true. Okay. Well, mental health. Who's got it? I got it real bad. What can I end on? You know, I say hello, like, hi, like it's the first time we've met. And I say goodbye, like, goodbye. Like, I think you're all gonna die after. But you know, the one thing that's true, the E in goodbye stands for exit, so I gotta go. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Oh, boy.
Allo Asimov, let them hear it!
Oh, shit, okay. Thanks for coming.
I aspire to wear a dress like you one day, for real.
What is the importance of events like this one at the Diving Bell Social Club?
I'm starting Tales of Gender Affirmation Live because I've noticed that comedians don't have a lot of spots when they happen to be queer or women or non-binary. I find there's generally maybe one spot on a lineup that's for a woman and one spot on a lineup for someone who's queer. And I find that can be very tokenizing. I think we need to have two spots or more spots, and a show like this where the entire lineup is in majority trans, non-binary, and gender non-conforming, we get to see comedians have more spots and more space to develop material instead of waiting much longer than comedians that are just cis men. I find the importance of this event is just to make sure that there is space for trans, non-binary, and gender non-conforming comedians in the scene.
What is the history of trans, non-binary, and gender non-conforming comedy in Montreal? Which shows paved the way for your recent effort?
I want to say for comedy specifically, I would thank Trana Wintour and shows that she has produced at venues such as Psychic City in the past and now and the Diving Bell Social Club since, because these shows have allowed just for visibility and representation trans comedians. That's so important to have space and visibility for trans comedians in comedy. It kind of feels like when there's less of you allowed in, you have to fight and prove yourself more. And also there has been yearly comedy shows. There's been yearly comedy shows by Taking What We Need, which have also largely had trans comedians. And the show that I'm producing has both comedy and storytelling to allow for more expression of emotions and not just stand up, which I think is very important to have just more space to express ourselves. Because when you're just telling jokes without like a story, you can't always say as much as you want about who you are and where you're coming from. I want to really help people's experiences be understood. And finally, there was an open mic called Gender Blender, which had a variety of different comedians, both trans, non-binary, and also just women and queer people who had stories to tell of their own, mainly through songs, music, comedy, and a little bit of storytelling. And that show's not around anymore, but that paved the way for me to think that a show like this could exist that could be more regular.
Once again, if our listeners want tickets to Tales of Gender Affirmation at the Diving Bell Social Club, where should they go?
Tickets for Tales of Gender Affirmation Live can be found on Eventbrite. When you type in Tales of Gender Affirmation Live or Tales of Gender Affirmation Live Comedy Show.
Thank you for your interview today.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
You have been listening to Alo Asimov speaking about her comedy show, Tales of Gender Affirmation. I am your host, Sheila Ferrando.
Early in the morning, before the sun rose, when the first bird sang, even while everyone was still asleep.
Morning. On that morning.
When the sun comes out.
This morning, baby.
Cock-a-doodle-doo. I hear the rooster crowing.
Now you must wake up.
Not every morning when I wake up.
I woke up this morning with
the kiss of the morning.
Got up 7:30 every morning. Had the same breakfast.
Réveillez-moi à 8 heures demain matin.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Morning. Riding a bike made of bacon and eggs.
In the morning.
In the morning.
Why should the sun replace the moonlight?
Has this ever happened to any of you, or will it happen to any of you, on the morning after the night before?
You are listening to The Morning After on CKUT 90.3 on the FM dial.
Le Vaisseau d'Or presents Desire Forever, a collaborative work between the Montreal Collective and filmmaker Fareed Kassouf, out August 13th, 2021. With us today, we have Etienne and Gabrielle of Le Vaisseau d'Or. Hi, Etienne and Gabrielle, and welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks, Sheila.
First, please introduce yourselves and tell us how you came to be involved in Le Vaisseau d'Or.
My name's Etienne. I play guitar mostly in Le Vaisseau d'Or with Gab.
Gabrielle. I'm 30 years old, play guitar, sing in Le Vaisseau d'Or. So yeah, we're pretty much a collective that started with Etienne and I. We've been playing together like forever, kind of learned how to play together. So it's just a natural evolution of that, I guess, just playing.
Who are your bandmates and what do you all play?
Currently, we're playing with Olivier, who's kind of playing like synthesizers and... He's also like catalyst in the band, making sure everything's happening.
Yeah, I think if it wasn't for Olivier, we wouldn't be speaking with you right now. He's like, he's the glue. So yeah, that's just the three of us these days. But we've been at 8P's before, been like playing since 2014, I think, with this project. So it's been playing with whoever is available and kind of into our ideas and ready to go with it.
Desire Forever. Tell us about the album.
Desire Forever. Yeah, it came about as we stopped playing for like 6 months or so. We're like busy with other projects. We had made a record, kind of let it live its life. And we had an invite to come play a session at CGLO for kind of the release of that record that we made. So since we hadn't played with the people we had been playing with a few months prior, we just went to do the session, Etienne and I, and it became what's the album now. Like it was a live session in where we improvised a track, we played the new song, we played a song that we used to play before live with in a very different setting since it was a duo thing. And Farid was with us at the moment, he was filming the session. So it was the start of the process.
Maybe listen to some of your music?
Yeah, for sure.
This is Desire Forever on the Wednesday Morning After. Who is Farid Kassouf, and what has he done with Desire Forever?
Farid is a good friend of ours. He's a librarian at Le Port de Tête, which is like a famous famous library in Montreal for poets, a real place with soul. So Farid is like he's just really passionate, and he's been making videos and films for poets for a while, like working with the Maison d'édition Les Crous and a bunch of other people, really just making little pieces of beauty happen. So since he's a good friend, we made like a few projects, few road trips with him just to go film some of our shows, find locations for videos, stuff like that. So it was just, it just made sense to be, we didn't know how it would kind of end up, but we know we wanted to do something with Farid. So it's really about the process. He's a good player for that.
Who produced, engineered, and mastered this multidisciplinary offering, Desire Forever?
Actually,
that's us. That's we produced us. It. Yeah,
we did it. Yeah, we did, like we did for most of our stuff. Yeah, actually.
Yeah, no, so it was recorded at CJLO, but I think it was Zach Bruce engineering those sessions. Then we recorded a bunch of stuff by ourselves, just a few overdubs, and then Colin Hagna from the Brian Johnston Massacre mixed the record, kind of gave it the whole direction, and Harris Newman mastered it.
What is the process you go through when you make an album and a video?
I think it starts with, like we said with Farid, just we want to do something with a friend or someone who kind of stimulates us creatively. It usually starts with like just fooling around with an idea and then trying to narrow it down to a project that's possible. So it's really, I think like with the artists that inspire us, it's really about what we get out of the process of doing the activity, you know, like the guys from Suicide, like the New York band from the 70s, those guys, at some point they were living apart. Like one guy was in New York, the other guy living in California, and they would just like come together really naturally to play music every once in a while. Like they wouldn't have seen each other for 2 years and then they would play a show. It's those kind of things that I think that inspire us, that you see that, okay, the process is really rewarding. And when you got a connection, you want to keep it, kind of trust that connection.
We've been playing together since like childhood, Gab and I. So I think the strength we've got as a band is keeping that kind of that synergy together while playing, and just like we know when it's right and when it's not, and we just continue to push in the right direction with the good vibes.
May we hear some more of your music?
Yeah, sure.
This is Golden Years on CKUT.
It's
If our listeners want some free listening time or to buy your music, where should they go?
Bandcamp.
Bandcamp, Spotify.
Spotify.
Stream the hell out of those songs.
iTunes, music, all that stuff.
Just go buy it on Bandcamp. That's the best.
And you can also find us on Spotify or iTunes music.
Well, thank you for your interview today.
Thanks, Sheila. I appreciate it.
You have been listening to Etienne and Gabriel of Le Vaisseau d'Or speaking about their latest release, Desire Forever. I am your host, Sheila Ferrando.
For generations, men and women alike have searched for plants or food, powders or potions that could turn up the heat. One food type prevailed. This week on In the Shower with Taz and Marcus, we ask, are oysters actually an aphrodisiac?
In the shower with Taz and Marcus, 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 in the shower with Taz and Marcus.
Hello, lovely listeners, and welcome to In the Shower with Taz and Marcus, a bite-sized, informative podcast that answers the mysteries of the world in 15 or so minutes.
Have you ever wondered if time travel is possible?
Or if alternate realities exist?
Are micro-pigs actually tiny pigs?
If you've wondered the answer to any of those questions, then good news, you've come to the right place. We have answered all of those, and we are about to answer one more.
So step into the shower with us as we answer the big question, are oysters an aphrodisiac?
In the shower with Taz and Marcus, 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 in the shower with Taz and Marcus.
Before we go in deep asking questions about oysters, there is something about oysters that I am absolutely sure of.
Oh yeah, what's that?
That they are disgusting.
Do you know what? You can stop right there and get off the oyster-hating train. Oysters are great. I love oysters. And do you know what? I think it's one of those things that, like, as you grow up and you stop being afraid of oysters, that's the sign of you being a good person.
What is it about them that you like? Like, I feel like anybody who likes oysters
They're good. You know, it's like, granted, they're like snotty little slime salt monsters.
Do they not just taste like seawater to you?
No, like that's when you get that finesse. You drink the liquor of the oyster, and you get a little bit of salt. You get a bit of umami. You get those kind of like those mineral notes. You know, I had an oyster recently where the oyster where it was farmed was near an offflow from a bog. So, like, you could actually taste a kind of woodiness to it. Oh, it was amazing.
And do you just swallow them down in one or do you chew them?
I kind of swirl them a little bit, swish them.
But you don't chew. You don't bite them.
You can chew.
But you don't.
I do, sometimes.
Okay.
It depends on the oyster. Like, if I'm getting something like a native, like a smaller oyster, then I will. But then if I'm having a gigas or like a Dungarvan special, then those are huge. I mean, those, like, I've had those with, like, they're the size of the palm of your hand.
Yeah,
you can't. you're not gonna chew that, you know. But also, like, yeah, it's like I enjoy it. I didn't always enjoy oysters. I didn't. Like, the first time I ever had an oyster, I was like 4 or 5 years old, and I remember watching my parents.
That just says a lot about Marcus's upbringing, doesn't it? At 4 or 5 years old, I was eating like sausages wrapped up in a slice of white bread, and Marcus was having oysters.
Well, I remember we were in Ballybunion, which is it was on the west coast of Ireland, and I remember seeing my parents eat oysters, and I was a kid. I was like, ah! I'm half French as well, for any new listeners.
So you were like, oh!
Yeah, I was like, oh! No, like, I was a little French kid being like, maman, papa, oysters, please! Because I wanted to be like my parents, and I tried my first oyster, and I vomited everywhere in the restaurant.
I can imagine what that vomit looked like. Snot.
It just looked like one oyster.
Oh,
and
God.
Whatever, like the chips I'd had for lunch. Anyway.
Love them or loathe them, it's been an urban myth for generations that they are, in fact, an aphrodisiac.
An aphrodisiac, for those of you who don't know, is something that turns up the heat, heightens your sexual desires, and brings the hubba hubba. Basically something that makes you horny.
Marcus knows this, but it's always been a dream of mine to open a corn shack.
So what's a corn shack? Just like paint a visual picture for us here.
Okay, like a stall that sells nothing but corn with all sorts of toppings. And I want to call the stall either Corn Hub or So Corny. Corny.
Do you know what, Taz? That's the wonderful thing about 2019. Like, today, you're a podcast producer. Tomorrow, you could be a corn shack entrepreneur. God knows what you could be in 10 years' time.
Keep the dream alive, baby.
Keep that dream alive.
Anyway, I far prefer to be talking about corn on this whole episode, but instead we've got to talk about oysters.
So just to kind of go back to zero, like, what is the actual definition for an oyster? Like, it's not a fish. Does it fall, like, is it the first cousin of a clam?
Oyster is the common name for a number of different families of saltwater bivalve mollusks that live in marine or brackish habitats. In some species, the valves are highly calcified and many are somewhat irregular in shape.
Okay. Do you know what? There's actually an ongoing debate at the moment on whether oysters are vegan.
Why is that?
So a lot.
Yeah, why is that actually?
So a lot of people are vegan for the reason that, like, you know, intensive meat farming is very damaging to the environment. Whereas oyster farming, because they are saltwater bivalve mollusks, is actually really good for the environment. Oysters are filter feeders, so you can put them anywhere. They're very cheap to consume, or very cheap to produce, sorry. You can put them anywhere and they will actually clean the water of wherever they are put. Also, when it comes to consumption, oysters don't have a central nervous system, so they have no consciences and they don't feel a thing. They're
so
also,
that is kind of like the parameters of being vegan or vegetarian. It's a central nervous system.
Nothing suffers.
Okay.
It's good for the environment and they're a really, really excellent source of protein.
Interesting. The only problem is they're disgusting.
I think they're deadly.
Anyway,
you're just a coward.
Okay, let's get back to the beginning of where this whole theory began.
Can I actually, just before you say anything, Taz and I once went on a date and I ordered some oysters and it was quite early in our relationship and she tried one and couldn't swallow it and she kept it in her mouth for, I'm going to say, like 5 minutes until eventually she had to spit it into the shell and put it back upside down into the ice.
Not my brightest moment.
It's okay. Let's go back, right back to the beginning. Like, where does this theory of oysters making you horny all begin? Like, how far back does it go?
Oysters have been a reputed aphrodisiac at least since the Roman Empire and supposedly were regularly enjoyed as a virility booster by Casanova, an Enlightenment era polymath who lived from about 1725 to 1798. Casanova became best known for having seduced more than 100 women, described at length in his memoir, and his secret va-va-voom may have been from oysters.
I'd love to read that memoir. It's like, oh yeah, my name's Casanova, I eat oysters and ride a load of women. Go on, Casanova, good man. So historically, we know that oysters have been enjoyed since the 1700s and may have been considered an aphrodisiac back then. But has there been any real research into the orgasmic properties of this saltwater bivalve mollusk since then?
Well, since Casanova, people believe it to be a bit of an urban myth. But then in 2005, the idea that an oyster is an aphrodisiac got a huge boost. So around this time, many consumer publications reported the bivalve mollusks, which include clams, oysters, mussels and scallops, have been found to have desire-inducing properties.
And which publications are these? Are they like Horny Oyster Monthly or are they actual credible sources?
They're actually credible sources. So the stories came out of a presentation at the American Chemical Society by George Fisher. I love that his name is George Fisher.
And yeah.
Yeah, I know. Anyway, mm-hmm. Bad joke. George Fisher is a professor of chemistry at Miami's Barry University. Fisher and some colleagues discovered that mussels contained the amino acid D-aspartic acid,
right,
which has been found to increase the level of sex hormones in lab rats. Even though the study did not involve oysters exactly, Fisher was quoted in a number of publications speculating that perhaps the amino acid could contribute to the aphrodisiac effect.
So I've never ever heard of a D-aspartic acid, but what exactly is its effect on humans? Like, does it inflate the balloon?
The effect of D-aspartic acid in humans is still being studied. It may increase testosterone in sedentary men, but what it can do beyond that is not exactly clear. According to a 2015 study published in the Journal of International Society of Sports Nutrition.
Ah, okay, so it increases the testosterone. That makes sense. But like, there are other supplements and food types known to boost testosterone production. Why is it only the oyster that's a link to affecting sex drive?
Michael Kreichman, a sexual medicine gynecologist and counsellor at the Southern Californian Center for Sexual Health and Survivorship Medicine in Newport Beach, California. Whoa, that's a mouthful. Has attempted to gather the available scientific evidence on so-called aphrodisiacs. And he thinks that people are really suffering in silence and kind of looking for good information, and there just isn't a lot out there.
So basically people are kind of clutching at straws.
In a 2015 paper in the journal Sexual Medicine Review, Kreichman found the risks of many substances people use to stimulate desire far outweigh any potential benefits,
okay, right,
of which he found very, very little. Oysters are of course safe to consume, but here's the crux of it. No scientific studies have been conducted to show they can stimulate desire. The bivalves do contain zinc, which has been found to be an essential nutrient for testosterone production and spermatogenesis, he wrote in a paper. They also contain specific amino acids, which you talked about earlier, and serotonin, which are integral in the neutral path of the pleasure response, according to Kreichman. But these minerals and chemicals are also found in countless other food types, so it's hard to say that solely an oyster is an aphrodisiac.
So it's basically, it's kind of based on the placebo effect and Casanova spreading rumours.
That's exactly it. And Kreichman actually talks about this, saying the challenge with studying oysters' potential impact on desire is that there is a very large placebo effect.
The placebo effect being, just for anybody who doesn't know, when people experience a benefit or change from an inactive supplement. Basically, the power of the mind.
Yeah, so basically when people are told that there is a change happening in their body and it's basically a lie, and they believe it to be happening because
when the placebo group in any kind of medical study are generally given sugar pills, and it's seeing if there's any noticeable difference in their conditions or behaviours as opposed to the people given the actual control substance.
Yeah, and it actually a lot of the time shows up a positive result. But if his patients ask about oysters, he tells them there is limited data to support their use. But, adds Kreichman, if they like having oysters and it makes them feel better, then why the hell not?
Has anyone other than Kreichman studied this? Like, this is what I love about In the Shower. You find people who've dedicated their lives to like one little specific mad thing, like do oysters wet the lettuce, you know, like it's kind of
okay. So I found another chap to have studied this, a guy called Barry Orr Komisaruk, a professor of psychology at Rutgers University in Newark. And he says that he knows of no data proving that oysters have an aphrodisiac effect. So far, no one has discovered any substance that can truly turn on desire, says Barry, who studies the neural pathways involved in sex and is the co-author of The Science of Orgasm.
So this guy spent his whole life researching the science of an orgasm.
I know.
Fair play.
I wonder, was there any practical experiments?
I'm sure there was. So he hasn't found any substance at all which can truly turn on desire. Like, he hasn't found that mythical kind of love potion. Has he found anything that actually affects a person's sex drives?
Some recreational drugs, like marijuana, can intensify the sexual response, he says. But that's not true for everyone. According to the University of California, Santa Barbara, which maintains a sexual health and information website based on scientific findings, marijuana can lead to heightened arousal, but it can also impair performance and lower inhibitions, leading to riskier sexual activity, according to the site.
So again, no real clear-cut proof on this one. Anything else that can affect the sex drive at all?
Alcohol can facilitate sex because it lowers inhibitions, but as Shakespeare noted in Macbeth, alcohol provokes the desires, but it takes away the performance. Pharmaceuticals like Viagra and Levitra add potency to sexual desire, but, adds Komisaruk, only if the desire is already there. So the likes of Viagra can aid sex, but only if the desire is there. Desire, Komisaruk says, is a very tricky issue. It's complicated and nobody really understands it very well.
So to kind of wrap things up, oysters might turn you on, but if they do, so might another whole host of food types and substances, right?
Yeah, so there is like, there has been a bit of science carried out on this, and there are things in oysters, there are amino acids and a whole host of other things that can kind of aid in sexual desire, but an oyster solely is not this be-all and end-all aphrodisiac that contains any abnormal things than any other food types that can aid desire as well.
Do you know what? I still love oysters and I'm still going to eat oysters. And who knows if that will do anything to me, but I love them regardless.
In the shower with Tazimarcus, 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 in the shower with Tazimarcus.
Well, there you have it, guys. If oysters turn you on, then continue to eat the oysters, but there may not be any scientific proof that they are the aphrodisiac they promise to be.
Just don't be a shellfish lover.
Guys, thank you so much for listening to this episode of In the Shower with Taz and Marcus. We hope you've learned something, and if you want to learn more weird, random and wonderful facts, then good news, there are over 75 episodes of In the Shower with Taz and Marcus that are ready for your waiting ears. We answer all types of questions in 15 or so minutes. You can download them, listen to them in bulk, listen to them on your commute, when you're exercising, when you're cooking, wherever you so please. But if you listen to them, you will be a more interesting dinner party guest.
And don't we all want to be a more interesting dinner party guest? If you have a question that you'd like to hear answered on In the Shower with Taz and Marcus, it couldn't be easier to get it in front of our eyes. You can email us on
InTheShowerPodcast@gmail.com.
Or you can get in touch with us on Facebook by looking up In the Shower with Taz and Marcus. Or you can get us on Instagram or Twitter at InTheShowerPod.
If you want to get in contact and just say that you listened to the podcast, we would really, really, really love that. All you listeners are invisible to us. So when we get an email from someone just saying that they've enjoyed the episode, then it really, really does make a huge difference to our days.
As ever, and a lot of you do send us pictures of your pets, but we can always take more.
If you've liked this episode, then please do share it to all your friends and family, anybody that you may think will enjoy it.
That's how podcasts spread, and we'd really, really appreciate it.
The debunking doesn't stop here. Next week, we're going to tackle a whole new question, and I'm excited for it.
This question comes from Sean McCardle, and he asks us, where do humans actually sit on the food chain?
I'm so excited for that one. That episode is going to be out next Monday in time for your morning shower. But in the meantime,
keep scrubbing.
In the shower with Tazimarcus, 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 in the shower with Tazimarcus.
This has been a production of the Headstuff Podcast Network.
You're listening to the Wednesday Morning After Show with your host, Sheila Ferrando, on CKUT 90.3 FM, Montreal, or worldwide at ckut.ca.
Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Democrats in the Texas House of Representatives